let me in. Shiba, shiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba, shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba, shiba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. Now, a while back, we had a gentleman on to talk about a crime thriller called The Doodler, and it just had an amazing run at Theater Rhinoceros, and now it's at the Marsh. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome playwright, co-director, and actor John Fisher. Hello.
Hey, Marilyn, how's it going?
It's going great. How about you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thanks for being on the show. So let's talk a little bit about The Doodler. The last time you told us a bit about it, but I know I've got a new slate of audience members who don't know anything about the show.
Yeah, I've been doing it for another 6 months now, and it's been going great. It is about a famous crime case from the 1970s,
mm-hmm.
and happened in San Francisco, and I play a character who decides to find the criminal. So it's an action-adventure pursuit crime drama based on a true story.
And did you write it?
I wrote it, yep. And it's based on the Doodler. He was a murderer in the 70s, and my character decides to find him because the police aren't doing anything. So it's got a ton of action and romance, and, you know, audiences seem to respond to it, which I'm really pleased about. So it's now at the Marsh.
So what was the inspiration for this topic, and are you old enough to be aware of it or to have been aware of that person during the 70s?
Well, I was only 10 at the time, and although I'm local, like you, I grew up in the Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't, you know, I wasn't aware of serial killers and things
right.
like that.
Right.
So, you know, the Zodiac Killer, of course, is very famous, but I didn't know about the Doodler until I read about him online. And it was actually during COVID that I read about him, and then I worked up this solo performance. So, you know, I've been kind of aware of things in the Bay Area my whole life,
mm-hmm.
but this didn't get a lot of coverage at the time.
Okay.
So, you know, it's sort of like a work of archaeology for me. I'm sort of like trying to bring awareness to this sort of unsolved crime.
Okay. So you originally mounted this play at Theater Rhino. Has the play gone through any type of metamorphosis, or has it pretty much stayed the way it was when you first started?
This is probably the show that's changed the most for me. I did it first on Zoom during COVID when we couldn't be together. Audiences and performers couldn't be in the same room, so I would just perform live on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never done that before in my life. It was a totally amazing experience. I was in my home acting for people watching, like, all over the world, which I didn't think would ever be possible. So COVID-19 was actually horrible, but also a revelation for me in terms of how you can perform live. And then when it was over, I turned it into a stage work,
mm-hmm.
mostly because people responded to it. They're like, wow, what an interesting story. You know, that's so exciting. It's so interesting, the history, but also just the way you did it. So I actually developed it into a stage play in New York City at the Tank.
Mm-hmm.
I had a residency there, and I thought, well, I'll just turn this thing I did on Zoom into a show. And that was kind of great because suddenly I didn't have this little box I had to act in. I could actually, like, get on my bike and ride it around the stage. I could chase myself. I could have fight scenes with myself. So I could do all this solo stuff myself, and I had to figure out how to make this like an action movie, you know, like
mm-hmm.
Lawrence of Arabia or Mission Impossible, except
mm-hmm.
with myself. And that was great. And then I did it at Theater Rhino, and then I did it at Safe House, and now it's in its 6th month at the Marsh. So
I love the fact that you're a one-person action movie, and I saw one of your productions at Theater Rhino, and you guys were like climbing up the walls and all over things, and I just love that. It was, I just love the physicality of it, and
That's what this is. And I'm a theater is like endless opportunities. We always end up, you know, like on stage, you know, and if I could sing like you, Marilyn, I would just stand and sing, but I can't sing. So I got to crawl up the walls, you know, because I'm like, singers can sing, dancers can dance. I can't do any of that stuff, but I can crawl up the walls. I can crawl on the floor. I can fly through the audience. You know, I can do all that stuff. You know, that action heroes do, you know, and they don't sing. So I'm like, well, you know, they're rich. So, you know, I can be rich, you know, I'll just use my body and fly around the room. Okay. And that's what I do in this piece. It's all about, you know, the potential of, and people are like at the march, they're like, whoa, I never see stuff like this. You know, I'm like, I mean, solo performance, I feel like can be like as crazy as like a movie. So that was really my goal, but also, you know, tell this very moving, very exciting story, which I feel like hasn't been given enough exposure.
So as a director and a person who's doing the one person show, what are some of the challenges of directing yourself?
Yeah, I have a co-director, Colin Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah. He's like, you know, really, you got to bring more variety to this character. I play 15 characters, and he's like, they're all very distinct.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very good at saying, you know, this character is like sort of, you know, his piece needs to have more variety. Go with the emotions. Don't just say the lines, play the lines. And he's great about that. And he's really, it makes me work harder.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm working really hard.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, And you know, once you get into your body, it doesn't feel like work anymore. But that first rehearsal where he's like, no, more variety, more this, more that. So he's been great. When I say we co-directed, it's just I took it so far without him.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like saying that I co-direct is more like an acknowledgement of my history with it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really the one that keeps it bright and fresh. And that's great. I mean, you have to have those outside eyes.
Yes.
Because, you know, you're sort of stuck in your own little world. So that's been great to develop it as far as I could take it, then have somebody say, okay, yes, I see it, and now do this, now do this. And it's like, he'll come back and watch the show, and he'll go, what happened to blah, blah, blah? Like three lines. I'm like, oh, I don't know. He said, you got to do those. I said, did I drop them? I'm not even aware.
Mm.
So he will bring stuff back to me, or gestures that got dropped, or things I did once and then didn't do the next time. He's really great that way. So yeah, he's been great.
Okay. So you're doing this play, and you said it was unsolved. So give our audience this, like, a brief overview of what happened back then.
Well, he killed five people, and the crime was never solved.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put myself back into history. And this is what I do when I do something historical. I put myself back in there, and I become somebody who's going to solve this crime. And I'm not going to tell you whether or not, I mean, it's my story, so I can change history if I want.
Okay.
But I'm not going to tell you whether or not I solve it. But
okay.
I get damn close. Okay, spoiler alert, it has not been solved. It hasn't been solved. It is still an open mystery. There are still suspects, and the case is still open. And, you know, some of these suspects are, you know, we better grab them soon because they're not going to be with us for much longer.
Mm-hmm.
So he focused on gay men. He went into bars and he doodled pictures of them. He walked up to them and charmed them with the pictures he drew of them. And I think that they were just flattered that somebody drew a picture of them. And he went off with them out to the beach and killed them. They all died at Ocean Beach. So that's the doodler. He doodled pictures of them.
Were there any people who survived his attacks?
There are three people who survived his attacks, but they would not testify because at the time you could be fired for being gay. Mm-hmm. They were afraid of losing their jobs.
So go ahead.
And one of them is still alive and still won't testify. I think because he's afraid that this guy's going to come get him. So it's pretty complicated. And one of the fascinating things is Harvey Milk was the great queer politician, the supervisor. He was aware of all this. And one of the first things he did when he got into office was he got it written into the charter of the city of San Francisco that you cannot be fired for being gay. So this case was sort of a landmark in motivating that decision, so that gay men felt like they could testify in court against people who attacked them.
I love
and,
it.
Yeah, it's sort of amazing. So in many ways, it's sort of this landmark moment in kind of, you know, social justice and queer politics and the police and crime. So my character goes back in and tries to lure the doodler to him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then ends up in sort of an extended action sequence in pursuit of this guy.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the suspects are still alive.
Yeah.
Is there a possibility that the suspects have come to one of the shows?
Wow. You see, every time I talk about this show, somebody comes up with something like that. That's great. I don't know. Now you're, I don't know. And I don't know if that's a good thing. I guess for marketing purposes, it would be good. But that's a little cynical. No, I mean, you know, I hope if they do, they somehow indicate to me that they're the person, and then I would really become my character, right? I'd be the hero.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that, I mean, that I'd be happy about. If I brought somebody like that to justice, I could dine out for the rest of my life on that one. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're doing it now at the Marsh, and how much time, like you said, you've been doing it for 6 months now?
I've been doing it for 6 months at various theaters. It's at the Marsh till July 6th, and that's themarsh.org, themarsh.org, mm-hmm. And we're on every weekend. It's a great space. It's one of my favorite spaces ever. I can fly all over the place, chasing myself and mm-hmm. fighting with myself. Yeah, it's terrific. So I hope people can check it out. It's Pride Weekend. It's a perfect show for Pride. It's a perfect show for July 4th. You know, it's very American.
And so if people want to find out more about the show or they want to find out how to get tickets, where do they do that?
Go to themarsh.org, themarsh.org. Mm-hmm. And, there's more information there. You can buy tickets. It's at the Marsh in San Francisco on the main stage, and the Marsh is on Valencia Street, 1062 Valencia, between 21st and 22nd, the heart of the Mission.
And if people want to find out more about what you're doing in your upcoming shows, how do they go about doing that?
My full name, John Latham Fisher, spelllikeitsounds.com.
Excellent. Well, John Latham Fisher, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
My pleasure. I hope maybe, wow, that's such a trip, Marilyn. I hope the doodler heard this, and I hope the doodler comes, in which case you get half the award. It's $100,000.
Really?
You're going to get 50. You're going to get Fitty. I'm going to get Fitty. We're both going to, you know, this is going to be a good year for us.
Or entice the witnesses to testify. They're probably retired. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, John, thank you again for being on the show.
Okay. Thanks so much, Marilyn.
All right. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. Check out the doodler at the Marsh. Coming up, we're going to talk with theater folk about theater.
Is a troubadour wash.
York and Harm of Will from Vespertine. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, in the studio audience, we've got a man who's got a lot of friends who like to do drama. That's so he calls it drama with friends. I'd like to welcome Ugo Baldessari. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. So nice to be with you.
So nice for you to come in. Now, Ugo and I have a relationship because we kind of work together, but he does this amazing theater thing. So let's talk about Drama with Friends. First of all, how did it get started?
So Drama with Friends was started in the summer of 2000 mm-hmm. by Judy Goddess. That is her real name. She's a... She works with San Francisco Community Living Center.
Mm-hmm.
And she's on the senior beat. She's a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And she decided after a few months of the pandemic that people were being isolated and they needed something to draw them together.
Mm-hmm.
And so she thought up of the idea of Drama with Friends, getting together once a month, a group of people who had a theater background,
mm-hmm.
to do original scripts on Zoom, live on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And they started and drew an audience. More people gravitated to it as performers as well as audience. I joined about a year after its inception,
mm-hmm.
and we're still going strong. We're just celebrated our fifth anniversary.
Wow. So this theater company came together during COVID, so you were doing everything digitally, virtually. Are you still doing everything virtually?
We're still doing it virtually.
Oh, okay.
We perform on the third Monday of every month.
Oh, okay.
And so this coming 21st of July, Monday,
mm-hmm.
we will be doing our next version live on Zoom of Drama with Friends. And we have the best thing for people to reach us is to go to just Google SF Drama with Friends.
Okay.
You'll get our Facebook page. You'll get the URL to join us on Zoom. You'll get something with our new affiliation that I'm here very proudly to talk about,
mm-hmm.
with Ruth's Table Gallery.
Okay.
So Ruth's Table Gallery is a beautiful art gallery dedicated to the memory of Ruth Osawa.
Mm, okay.
They actually have her kitchen table in the gallery,
uh-huh.
that she used to work on. And it's a beautiful venue. They foster a lot of local artists,
mm-hmm.
not just visual but performing as well. And they have invited us to become one of their artists in residence.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, we're really happy about that. We first did a live version of some of our plays last November,
mm-hmm.
and it was such a hit that they've asked us to come back. So later in July, on Saturday the 26th at 3 p.m., we will be performing live at Ruth's Table Gallery, which
uh-huh.
is on 21st Street just off of Mission.
Oh, okay.
And we're doing a show called Lollapalooza, which is an amalgam of about six or seven of our most successful plays that we did on Zoom.
Uh-huh.
And we have local actors who will be performing staged reading of some of these original scripts.
Okay. Now, for our listening audience who might not know the difference, what is a staged reading versus, like, any other performance?
Well, live theater, of course, is actors with having their parts memorized,
mm-hmm.
rehearsed for many weeks with costumes, sets, sometimes mixed media,
mm-hmm.
and we do a sort of adumbrated version of that. So basically, actors will be having scripts in hand. There'll be some staging, some movement,
mm-hmm.
but no scenery, just a bare stage with some chairs or stools,
mm-hmm.
a few props, and some costumes. And we'll be reading off of scripts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned that you guys are doing all original works. Now, where do those original works come from? Do you guys write them yourselves, or do you find them at the library, or how do you get your scripts?
Well, much to my amazement, because before I joined this company, I never did 10-minute plays. You
uh-huh.
know, I was involved in one-acts and full-length plays.
Mm-hmm.
There are literally thousands of 10-minute scripts written by accomplished writers all over the English-speaking world.
Really?
Yes. One of our playwrights lives in New Zealand.
Nice.
And some of our own performers are playwrights as well. We regularly perform some of their work.
Mm-hmm.
We've got writers scattered everywhere.
So how do you find these 10-minute productions? Is it just a section in the library, or do you hear about them? How do you know which ones to do?
Well, there are various ways. Now, of course, a lot of playwrights have found out about us, and so they send the scripts unsolicited.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We also go to something called Play Exchange,
okay.
new Play Exchange. We have with us, because we're on Zoom, a handful of performers on the East Coast. And they were involved or have been involved in another play reading a group called Pages.
Okay.
And so they have access to a lot of playwrights that we have learned about through them. We have a backlog of 50 or 60 scripts that we have yet to produce.
Okay. So how many, how big of a collective is this Drama with Friends?
Well, it's grown in the last 5 years. We have about 16 to 18 performers in the Bay Area.
Okay.
And then we have about another 10 or 12 who are scattered, like I say, on the East Coast. We have a young lady up in Oregon. We have a couple who are expats who live in Costa Rica.
Wow.
And because of the beauty of Zoom, we can all perform at the same time together.
Okay, so initially it starts out as a local Zoom thing. I'm assuming that group of friends, word of mouth. So then these other people who come into it, how did they get involved in it?
Well, I think a number of ways. Some of them saw our performances and wanted to join in. We're always looking for more actors.
Oh, okay.
So that's probably the most organic way. And then some of the folks on the East Coast, I guess, found out about us, started spying on us, and liked what they saw. And it was somewhat different from the way they do it on Pages, which is a lot more plays and playwrights, I understand. And so they decided they wanted to get involved.
Okay.
So we have auditions for folks who want to join us now. We've gotten more formalized. And we've grown from, I used to be the only director, and now we've got seven people who are directing plays. So
It's
very exciting how we've grown over the years.
And then what's the age range of people who participate in it?
Well, because of community living campaigns stricture, you have to be 50 years of age or older.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that, go ahead.
So there's still a few of us around.
Okay. But that's amazing because I'm sure there's like a there must be thousands upon thousands of people who are, you know, above 50.
Yes, 50.
And want to be actors, and this is somewhat accessible to them.
Absolutely, completely accessible as long as they can perform on Zoom in the comfort of their own home.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you are doing like six or seven of your most popular pieces, and how, since everything is online, how do you ascertain whether or not a piece is popular if it's happening via Zoom?
Well, that's a great question. So some of us have quite a bit of live theater experience. And so, in fact, there are four other directors who will be working with me here in San Francisco. And we've gotten together, and our criteria to select these plays starts with, well, what's going to be stage-worthy live? What will an audience respond to? Because it's not just the spoken word. And the big difference, interestingly enough, is when you're acting on Zoom, it's like being on a close-up all the time. You've got a camera right there on your face. Whereas in a live venue, of course, there's space to deal with. The spoken word is still, you know, paramount. But there has to be more body language, more gestures, and so forth. And we're taking a chance because, quite honestly, some of the performers who will be working with us at Ruth's Table in Lollapalooza have not been on stage before.
Okay.
And so this is going to be their trial by fire, so to speak.
Okay, throw them in the deep end.
Yeah, but like I say, it's a staged reading, so it's not full movement, not full choreography. And because it's all a labor of love, we don't rehearse these pieces more than a few times.
So if you love it, you don't want to rehearse it?
Well, people who have joined us have had the experience of just, you know, sitting in front of their computer and reading scripts. That's how the whole thing started. In fact, they didn't do any rehearsing when they first got together.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then I came in and I came in with the idea, earth-shaking idea of, you know, we could be better if we rehearsed.
Ah, there you go.
Well, you know, you laugh, Marilyn, but there was a lot of pushback to that.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because it was, again, comfort zone, you know? Really nice to be able to just read a script and then go on air and do it. But, you know, it lost some of its potential.
Sure, sure.
And so while there was some pushback, a lot of people's, and I made the rehearsals voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
And it started that way, and people who came and rehearsed got better.
Mm-hmm.
What a thought. And other people saw that, and so they thought, oh, okay, well, maybe this is not a bad idea.
I was just about to ask you that, because I would imagine that it's just what you said, that people, they saw other people actually doing a really good job, and they thought, oh, well, oh, okay, now I understand why people rehearse.
Exactly.
So that they can find the characters.
So they got bit by the theater bug, basically.
But it blows my mind that people, that it never occurred to people to actually rehearse something.
Well, I think the whole thing started with non-theater people.
Oh, okay.
You know, who are literarily minded, obviously.
Uh-huh.
Who are very good, intelligent readers.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they thought of it more as reading literature for the benefit of a group of community.
But even if you're listening to a podcast, you can tell the difference between someone who actually has practiced it and someone who is just winging it.
Yeah. No, most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. And so that's been some of our challenge, and it's interesting. Most of the scripts we do have fairly equal roles in
mm-hmm,
them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a chance for people to really test their chops and get better. Our directors, some of our directors have a fair amount of experience as acting coaches.
Okay.
And so we avail ourselves of their talents.
What are some of the challenges of doing shows on Zoom versus live? Because I remember when we were all trying to do Zoom and, you know, like dealing with the electronics.
Yeah, well, dealing with the electronics is, as you can imagine, is the first hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten good at, you know, knowing how to turn our Zooms on and our cameras on and off.
Mm-hmm.
We have a technical person who spots the actors, because in a Zoom performance, actors and audience are all on the same screen, on the same gallery view,
mm-hmm.
but we found a way to isolate the actors in a particular show so that the audience sees only them.
That's an added value.
That's a wonderful added value.
That's kind of like an advanced Zoom knowledge.
It is, yeah. We are advanced Zoom 101, actually.
Nice. Okay.
The other challenge is getting the audience to keep their microphones off during the performance.
Oh, dude, some people turn.
Oh, yeah. You know, Harry, did you get the coffee yet? In the background, you know. And our actors have learned to kind of pause and, you know, wait for that to go by. And then somebody politely says, could you turn your microphone off, please. There's some technical glitches. A Zoom, as you know, in large meetings, because of the bandwidth of video, freezes sometimes.
Right.
People freeze, which is very different than actors freezing.
Sure, sure, sure.
The expression of actors freezing, going dry on lines. And we've had actors who have resorted to leaving the Zoom completely, going out and coming back in as the only way to resolve that problem.
So does that mean that people really have to hone their improv skills when these things go on?
Some of that has happened.
Okay.
Yeah. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm a big improv person, so I would say unfortunately, we haven't had that too much of that happen.
Okay.
But it is interesting when that does happen. And that's what we have to do, you know. We've only stopped the show once or twice because of just an insurmountable Zoom situation.
Okay.
Our audiences are used to that, and so they're, you know, they're pretty easygoing about it. And like I say, it's very seldom has that happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The other problem with Zoom is, the biggest technical problem is, actors can't top their lines.
What does that mean?
It means I say a line, and then there's a slight pause before you say a line. Otherwise, Zoom cancels us out.
Okay.
So we've come upon scripts where the playwright asks, you know, the two or three characters to speak in unison or to say the lines in a syncopated version.
Right, right.
We have to kind of deconstruct that and work with the technical limitation.
So that forces everyone to actually listen, which is a good skill to have in normal life.
You know, I wish more people practiced it. I completely agree with you. Yeah, so we have to listen, and we've sort of honed our timing chops in such a way that we can appear to be speaking right on top of each other, just allowing that split second for Zoom.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, the real biggest challenge to someone who's a theater person is we have no idea how we're coming across to the audience. You know, the magic of live theater is it's a communal event.
Yes.
And the energy flows from the audience to the actors and back again.
Yes.
And we have none of that on Zoom. We are in our own, you know, abodes. In fact, we're looking at a script on our screen. We're scrolling a script.
You're really disconnected.
Very disconnected. I kind of liken it to an airplane pilot flying completely blind on instruments.
Wow.
Yeah. And fortunately, we videotape our performances and make them available in a limited version because of copyright for the playwrights to our performers to see how they've done. We've used videos sometimes in the rehearsal process so that people can see how they're coming across, because it's a complete mystery until you actually see the video of performance afterwards.
But that's good, because most actors don't record their performances on stage, so it's great that they sort of get that live feedback right away, and they can go, oh, I didn't know I did that thing all the time. Why didn't anyone tell me that I suck my teeth or you know, whatever it is?
I have that nervous tick or whatever. This is true. By the same token, I come from old school theater where we really did not foster looking at oneself while acting, you know, like in a mirror, let alone on video, because you're supposed to be present in the moment, focusing on the reality of your character and the other characters, and a third part of you is aware of the audience.
Right, but given the medium, that turns it all on its head. I mean, you can't do any of the traditional things.
Correct. Now, we have, however, compensated for some of the traditional trappings. For example, we have backgrounds. So we have backgrounds that serve like a scenery, and some of us have gotten adept at even changing the background during the show if people change scenes. We have backgrounds where you have two or three characters, say, sitting at a restaurant, but you have one person with one view of the restaurant in their background and someone else with a different view. So we've gotten fairly adept at doing that. We do sound effects that sometimes actually work and are syncopated. We've done a little bit of Foley. You're in radio. You know what Foley is?
I do, but tell our listening audience.
So Foley goes way back to the days of early radio where, you know, you have a horse's hooves clip-clopping in the background, or a door slamming.
Walking across gravel.
Crossing grass.
Door opening.
Door closing, a body falling. And all of that is done by a sound effects person using interesting equipment on microphone.
And that person's job is they are the Foley.
Oh yeah, that's very crucial. Very crucial. We've done a little bit of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So talk about you said like there's 6 or 7 10-minute shows. So what are some of the shows?
Well, let me see. We hearken towards comedy or the comedic, dark or light, but we've also done some shows that are quite moving, quite heavy. I mean, given the audience, we don't eschew talking about mortality.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll hawk some of the plays that we're going to be doing live, if I may.
Please.
We're going to be doing a play called The 30-Foot Hamster Wheel.
Ooh.
The 30-Foot Hamster Wheel we did on Zoom several months ago, and it will work very well live as a stage reading. It's about it's a spoof on theater.
Mm-hmm.
We like to do backstage shows.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a one-minute play festival in New York City. They take their drama very seriously, and
uh-huh.
they do many, many one-minute plays.
Okay.
And it's a bunch of well-meaning people who really don't know what they're doing.
Okay.
And as a result, all sorts of havoc breaks loose. And it also spoofs some of your stereotypes of people, you know, who take themselves very seriously.
In the theater,
exactly. And it's great fun. And there's a bear.
A bear.
A bear gets cast by somebody well-meaning instead of a hamster. And that's why instead of a normal hamster wheel, you have a 30-foot one.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very Spinal Tap.
Very Spinal Tap, and it moves really quickly.
Uh-huh.
And like I say, it's got a lot of theater people in it who take themselves really seriously. So that's one of the fun ones.
Mm-hmm.
We have a really very moving show we're going to do called The Care and Feeding of Pigeons.
Okay.
Which is about an elderly lady who keeps some pigeons. And it's a two-person scene with her granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
And grandma decides that it's time for her to fly the coop, so to speak. And it's very upbeat,
mm-hmm.
very beautiful. I'm getting emotional just thinking about it. But she decides to go out on the roof.
Oh.
And fly with the pigeons.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Really, really strong play. We've had some monologue plays.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing any of them this time, but there was one very haunting one of a young mother. By the way, we don't always play just people 50 years of age or older.
Mm-hmm.
We've played two-year-olds and six-year-olds, which
okay.
I much prefer playing.
Okay.
And we've also performed animals, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this getting back to this other very serious play about a young mother who is still grieving the loss of her teenage daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Very strong play. So not everything is fun and games. You know, we try to mix it up and really create an amalgam mm-hmm. Of reality for our audience, you know.
So remind me again the dates of these performances. And I know one is Ruth Asawa Table, but remind me the dates.
Okay. So in order, the third Monday of the month is when we perform on Zoom.
Oh, okay.
So the next one will be on the 21st of July
okay.
at 6:50 p.m.
Okay.
And if you just Google us, the best way to Google us is is SF Drama with Friends. You can get all the entree you want about that,
mm-hmm.
as well as our live show, which is the following Saturday, the 26th of July,
okay.
Lollapalooza
mm-hmm.
at Ruth's Gallery on 21st Street between Mission and Cap.
Okay, and at the one that's happening on Monday.
Yes.
Is that going to be some of the shows that you just were describing?
No. The ones I described were done
for the live one.
In the past, those will be live. So,
okay.
Upcoming on the Monday, Flying Cows.
Ooh. See, I love all these animals. You've got your pigeons, you've got your hamster with the bear. Now we've got flying cows.
Yeah,
continue.
Two cows and a horse. You know, what's not to like?
What's not to like?
In fact, it's written by our wonderful, he's a librarian by day and he's a playwright at night, Mr. McGregor from New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
He's got hundreds of scripts being done all over the English-speaking world.
Wow. Wow.
He's a gold mine. Yeah. So,
and he just stumbled across you guys and said, hey, I want a piece of this?
No, one of our friends from the East Coast knew about him. They've been doing his plays, turned us on to him, and the treasure chest was opened.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right.
So the nice thing you see about doing cows and a horse on Zoom is they can each be portrayed by one person.
I like it. I also like the sentence, doing cows and a horse on Zoom. Just that, like, if someone just were to tune in at that moment, they'd go, what?
Yeah. Whereas, of course, if you do a horse on stage, you need to hire two people.
Right. You Sometimes know. Three.
Yeah. It's a union. It's a union. So let me see. What else are we doing live on Zoom? Well, Divided We Stand is a play about a husband and wife who have very opposite contemporary political affiliations, and they're active in politics. Mm. There's another politically focused play about it's a fictitious play based on Dick Cheney.
Okay.
We remember him.
Yeah. Who knew that those were the good old days?
The good old days, yeah, when people still played by the certain rules. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he is auditioning potential vice presidential candidates for George W.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that a comedy?
It's a dark comedy.
Okay.
Anything with Dick Cheney in it has to be a dark comedy,
right,
I think.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So those are the ones that come to mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that are going to happen on the Zoom one. Why 6:50?
Well, thank you. We start right at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
Sharp.
Okay.
And coming into our Zoom through Community Living Campaign, you have to go through a registration process.
Okay.
And that takes a bit of time. And then, in fact, it involves getting the link by email after registering.
Okay.
We recommend actually registering during the day, that same day.
Okay.
That way you have the link and all you have to do is press the button and you're on stage.
Okay.
You're on live with us.
All right.
So we have some pre-show stuff that we do when you come in at 6:50.
Okay.
Biographies of the playwrights and the list of plays and so forth. So we like to start right at 7.
Okay. So they register where?
Well, it's at the Community Living Campaign
website.
Okay. It's a particular site dedicated to us, and they get a link. And they get on the mailing list for Community Living Campaign, which they want to because Community Living Campaign sponsors a myriad of events. They publish a monthly calendar of events all over San Francisco, many of them virtual.
Okay.
I mean, you could do virtual – you could do chair yoga.
Oh, okay.
You could learn how to knit. You could join somebody who talks about the blues.
Okay.
Something you might be interested in. There are various writing workshops.
Wow.
Yeah. Hundreds of things. Some of them are very community, neighborhood-based.
Okay.
Some of them are, you know, just of interest to anybody age 50 or older. And so that's very available. And so that's another reason to register with Community Living Campaign.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they sponsor us. They provide the Zoom. And so this is how you can get into that. At Ruth's Table, when we perform live, it'll be free admission. Donations, of course, gladly accepted.
Sure.
And like I say, this is our second venue, our second in-person. Work there. And we're now going to be artists in residence.
Very cool.
Yeah. So we look forward to being there frequently live. By the way, on the Zoom shows, the performances are followed by a Q&A with the playwrights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Almost 100% of the playwrights show up, depending on where they are, what their schedule is, and they're on hand afterwards, so people in the audience can ask them questions. They can talk to the directors. They can talk to the actors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really quite a nice, lively discussion for about 30 minutes.
Very Very cool. Now, you say you're a director, Uo, and are you also an actor, or do you just direct in these?
No, I do both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I also have done a little bit of Foley.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and I'm not much of a playwright. That's to say, I haven't done much work, but we did workshop a part, a cutting from a larger play that I've been working on.
Oh, very nice.
But many of our performers are triple threats. They're directors, they're actors, and they're playwrights.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's kind of difficult when you're a director and an actor to refrain from trying to direct when you're supposed to just be acting.
Funny you should mention that. it's become a bit of a challenge. We've over the years, we've developed a certain set of protocols based on encountering some problems or what have you. So we generally try not to have someone who's directing also performing in the same show.
Mm.
They may act as an understudy,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they've had to go on because someone had a difficulty at the last minute.
Sure, sure, sure.
But otherwise, yeah, you can perform in a play that someone else is directing. You can direct your own script, but generally we refrain from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's the richness of other people interpreting the work.
Very good. Well, once more for our listening audience, when and where for Drama with Friends?
Okay, so Drama with Friends, Monday, the 21st of July, on Zoom, starting at 7 p.m., so come on early and register. And then the following Saturday, the 26th of July, at Ruth's Table Gallery at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. They are at 3160 21st Street between Mission and Cap.
Excellent.
And you can capture us just by doing going on Google with SF Drama with Friends. And you'll have entree to all of that. Our Facebook page, we have an Instagram page with photographs. I'm sure soon we'll be selling T-shirts. And we're really happy for this opportunity to talk to you and your audience about the wonderful work that so many people are doing.
Excellent. And with that, Ugo Baldessari, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I've learned about the Drama with Friends. I've learned about the SF Community Living
campaign.
And I'm just I'm thrilled to have you on the show today. Thank you so much.
Really fun and a privilege. Thank you, Marilyn.
All right, people of Earth, you heard it here. Drama with Friends, Community Living Campaign. You also got to hear about the Doodler earlier at the Marsh. You've heard about Theater Rhino. If you're not getting your mind touched, it's a conscious choice. It's a decision that you're making. Life's short, so go out there and sample everything that's on life's platter. It's time for me to turn the microphone over to Mr. Ford, who'll be pleasuring your ear hole. I'm going to leave you with Orchestra, Baobab, and Bulmamine. Until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
Matay amanyay bo nyawul munyaw lay lay la la bo nyawul munyaw sumane
bulmamin
lay lay